Okay, then. This is the meeting of the Poe and Conduit Commission. Tuesday, October 22nd, it's 10:30 a.m. We're in the Michael J. Lombardi Building, 831 Mass Ave, basement conference room. Present are the commissioners, Chair Nicole Moretti Ferreras, Eve Lankowskis, and TJ Shea.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
So, we had originally noticed that we were going to go into, or that I was going to move that we go into executive session. We're not going to do executive session today. We're just going to jump straight into the admin matter. I don't think that we need to discuss the Exynet complaint, so I'm just going to move forward unless you guys want to discuss that.
No.
Okay. So we'll just go straight into item number four of the agenda, which is a discussion of the small cell policy, specifically the matters that we discussed and heard at the October 17th meeting, and then maybe our further recommendations to the small cell policy. But before we jump into that, I want to make sure that you guys went through, not that it needs to be approved here, but I just want to, because we have IT building the Viewpoint small cell application, that you guys had an opportunity to review that application that we built. I sent it to both of you, or I didn't send it, Melissa sent it to both of you, and I also I printed a copy of it. The checklist generated, I know that Steve sent a comment to Melissa that it requires power conduit route but does not mention communication conduit route. Does our small cell policy mention communication conduit route? I don't think it does.
I think it does.
Where?
I
just want to make sure. I mean, I know that the checklist, I did it very kind of like, you know, short and sweet, and I tried to, let me see, small cell policy section 2D, because I didn't want to write everything specifically, 2D.
Well, you could always just...
Because it says type of equipment specifications, equipment mount type and material, power source or sources for equipment, including necessary wires, cables, and conduit, distance and direction from the power sources and maps, if any. That's what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Type of equipment, specifications of equipment, equipment mount type and material, power sources and route. So you don't think power sources and route...
Well, I think you say power slash communication source and route. Just add the one word in there, communication.
Okay. I'm fine with that. What I'm concerned is that the actual small cell policy does not mention communication conduit route anywhere that I see. So if that's something that the small cell policy should have, then I think we should definitely include that in the stuff that we forward to our lawyers to look at in terms of making further edits to the policy. And you know what might be helpful? Can you go upstairs and ask Melissa to, in her laptop, have the revised policy, and then we can do a control find to make sure that I'm not wrong on this. And if it is, also so that we can highlight it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I saw this email from you, I'm like, oh, I've never seen this. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, unless you find it, and I totally missed it.
It's just a more detailed request than what's listed in 2D, I think, right? Same principle.
I think so, but if...
But it needs to be shown.
But if it's not clear, I mean, this is literally a copy and paste of the small cell policy,
mm-hmm.
this checklist, with, you know, less extra words. But with that said, I know I don't have any communication conduit anywhere in this checklist, and quite frankly, I never saw it anywhere in the thing. And you would think, and that's where you would want it in 2D 4, mini 4. What are these called? Is this, these mini Roman numerals?
Oh, I hate
subparagraphs. I don't like
that. Okay. So mini 4. I'll call it mini 4.
Include necessary wise scale.
I think they're Romanettes.
Romanettes.
No, it doesn't.
But that's where we would add it?
Power source or... Yeah, I think you could actually take sources out, but power source should be and or communication for equipment.
Communication conduit?
It says detailed drawings and descriptions of the equipment. So does detailed drawings would be, then you go down to 4, it says power source or sources for equipment.
Why couldn't you just say power and or communication source?
Yeah, we just want
to. Okay. All right. Perfect. Power source and or.
Communication. Well, power, communication, power or sources.
Power source and or communication sources for equipment or communication conduit for equipment.
Do you want it up on the screen?
No. I don't think so. Thank you.
Sources should even be in there because there's only one power source.
Okay,
it wouldn't be sources.
So it would be power and or communication
conduit for equipment.
That's in the policy.
No. We would be adding that to 2D.
To the application.
Nope. To
2D.
Romanette 4 would now read power and or communication conduit for equipment. And then everything else that it says. And so then our checklist would also be changed from detailed drawings, blah, 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 type of equipment, specifications, blah, power and or communication conduit. Root?
Yes, and root, yes.
Okay. And then the same on the A policy, power and or communication conduit route for equipment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. See? Okay. So that takes care. Thank you. This one. Takes care of that for me. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yep. Beautiful. Thank you. All right. Well, that takes care of that. Did you guys see the application? Were there any questions that I was missing or that we missed? I'll tell you what I tried to do. I tried to make it as simple as possible in terms of the questions, and then that's why the checklist will be generated so that every other thing would be on the checklist.
Yes.
Are we going to have a checklist or a different application for that 6409?
That would be something that, yes, that I want to discuss now, too. One thing at a time.
Right.
Killing me, TJ. But yeah, in terms of the current application, the proposed current application, clearly it might need to change if we change the policy, but I worked, when I created this, I worked off of the revised proposal mm-hmm. of the October 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So at least this would be sort of the most up-to-date for now, provided that we adopt the policy as is or with minimal stuff. But other than that, you guys didn't see anything that I missed or any questions that you might want?
No, I think it grabbed everything.
All right. So that gets rid of that, which is excellent. Okay. Oh, the notice of vote, did that make sense to you guys? This letter. I just gave you that in the printed materials too.
The only question I had was the $270.
Mm-hmm.
And when that is required.
So based on the policy, the way that it, the revised version, we would have renewals. So we tell them that by January 2nd, And this might actually be something that we may want to change. Or maybe something that I may want to change. So right now, the revised policy says that they have to submit this affidavit, this annual recertification, this is Roman numeral number 3, no later than January 2nd. That would mean that we would have to start our quote-unquote renewal campaigns for all pull and conduit, I would say, between mid-November and beginning of December. And hopefully by then they submit their affidavit, they pay their fee and whatnot. Mm-hmm. The reason I say I may want to ask you guys to maybe consider changing, and provided that the legal minds approve, to maybe move it in February. And the reason for that is the license commission staff would have to be reviewing this and taking all of this into account. And right now, between October and December, we renew over 2,000 permits.
Because you do all the common vic and...
Mm-hmm. We do common vic, we do alcohol, we do entertainment, we do
older,
we do Hackney.
We're going to start that.
You're going to start that too. So I'm thinking, I need some peace of mind, and so does my staff.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if we move the annual recertification to some, I mean, I know it's not the beginning of the year, but to some random date, maybe
March
February
1st.
Or March 1st,
March 1st
or something like that.
Starts.
Before the season starts, you think? So
March 1st.
So they would have to submit it by March 1st. So they would have basically, we'd start the campaign, let's say February 1st, and they would have the entire month of February to do it.
How long of a window do you give them to start the process?
So in theory, with Viewpoint, we can start quote-unquote renewal campaigns whenever. The complicated issue here is going to be permits that are in the middle of the process. So maybe we've already given them the okay, but they haven't finished installation yet.
Right.
But I think March 1st sounds good. Does that sound good?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe we'll make that suggestion and hopefully there won't be an issue with that. Okay. Anything else about the notice of vote?
But the initial 270 was my larger question. So
uh-huh.
I mean, so that's the annual. So we're taking a an application fee, which is not the 270, right? That's the 500 or
yep,
whatever.
Yeah, that's the 500. Yeah.
Yeah. So until they're actually up and running, I mean, so we're taking that money. We're taking the application fee, and then the 270 is right away.
Yes. Within
rather
five
than
day.
So if it doesn't get, but what happens if it doesn't make it to installation? In other words, it doesn't they
that's
don't get it
them.
Built by 60. Okay, so then if it's not done in 60 days or
they
not
pay
started
270 if they don't start it within
well that whole everything becomes void.
Oh, so they get paid. Yeah, they pay again.
Yeah.
So everything just blanks out and they got to start all over again.
I think so. The way the policy is written right now, yeah, if they don't comply with our citing policy and they don't complete stuff, it is I think, what's the term they use, something about withdrawn, and then they have to refile and pay all application and fees after the fact.
Unless
but
they give us something in writing that they want an extension.
Unless they give us something in writing that they want an extension, and
okay.
then we approve it.
All right.
But we can certainly ask that to law to get more clarification, but I think the way that the policy is written right now, that's how it works.
Okay. I just wouldn't want to get into in a position where that if they've asked for the extensions and they didn't receive it or that they wouldn't want that 270 back, but it's spelled out that they don't get any fees back.
Yes.
Okay.
And the 270 in theory is only if we grant it, which is why in the original policy we had it that they had to pay it right off the bat. But the 270 is only if they actually get the grant.
They actually get the grant.
So that's why we moved it to after the approval, because then otherwise we would have to be refunding anything that we deny. So, but it's the 270
okay.
gets triggered when we grant them permission to attach.
Okay.
Okay. Let's take care of that.
Just getting back to the checklist, one
yep.
small little thing. Should we Under the, if application is granted, and it says obtain excavation permit and utility permit if applicable.
Yep.
Should we be more generic and say public works, electrical and or traffic permit?
Sure. DPW, electrical or what, or traffic?
Traffic.
Okay. And then maybe I think that's something I may have to change here. How would we know if they need traffic? We would have to add that step, right?
It's a case by case, depends.
But that would be something that's decided by DPW at that point, when you guys do your sign off?
The only time that they would want, or traffic would be involved, if they're taking out meters.
Taking out meters.
Or if they wanna post the street.
But it would literally be just one of those things, like same with the arborist or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. All right, so it wouldn't change the current workflow step.
No.
It would, okay.
No.
But we automatically forward the same permit, the same utility permit that we forward to DPW, we forward to traffic in case it comes up.
Okay. All right. Now, you know how the tolling agreement, I'll just take this one because it's easier and it's a one-pager thing. I just gave you a revised draft of the tolling agreement. This is based on the recommendation that it be malleable so that they could ask for more additional time than the 60 days. Here, you can work off of mine. So that middle paragraph is what I changed, and I basically did it a minimum of 60 days and a minimum of 75 days, and then I just left a blank there. And unless you guys have an issue with this, I would give this to the lawyers to look at it just
sure.
to make sure that it covers everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what I think we should do is I gave you a copy of draft minutes for October 17, just so that you guys have it and look at it, and also because I think it sort of summarizes what people said. But I also gave you the revised small cell with the comments on stuff that was discussed during the meeting. And I figure we can go through that
mm-hmm.
and sort of, because some of these things I think we should get more clarification on in terms of flagging it for the lawyers to get stuff. So 1A, the stuff about the public right-of-way. The Verizon people flagged it for the 270, but I think it's only on the $1,000 fee that it's mentioned. I mean, I don't know that it makes a difference one way or the other, but I just flagged it for the attorneys. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that.
I don't.
No. So the question would be whether it be a public. There was a question whether it be a public way fee.
Yeah, what she was saying was that they say we can charge a fee. What we can't do is say that it's because
way.
Of the
right.
use of the public way. I don't know that it reads exactly like that, but if taking that part out sort of clears that up, I don't know that it's a big deal one way or the other. But again, I flagged it for the attorneys, but I don't have. We won't be the ones defending that.
Right.
The law department will.
Okay.
So. they didn't really say that our fees were wrong.
No.
Except
right.
for Extinet, I think they object to the last sentence on A, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. 1C was the notice to other providers prior to the filing of the application. I sort of agree with this one and all the comments that we received on this. And based on what, Steve, what you said in the last meeting, that that we don't usually ask for common trench. I'm just wondering if we can just ask for it simultaneously. So the problem here is the shot clocks.
Right.
We can't really ask them after they come in to do something, in theory, which I think is ridiculous, but. So I'm wondering if, rather than saying prior to filing the application, if we say that they give notice to other providers within 500 feet.
If they want to participate.
But this is the other thing, because the way this reads right now is you notify other providers that you're going in to, one, to ask whether you want to join, mm-hmm. not whether you can join.
And not only that, when we get into the conduit placement, you know, other utilities may want to jump in that trench, not only a small cell.
Yeah.
So if they're digging down a whole street, it becomes a common trench along with. So they'd be notifying providers, but within our siting policy, it says that they need to notify everybody, not just small cell providers.
And that's actually not, you're right, and that's not how C reads. I know later on we mentioned the siting policy, but that's not how C reads. Well, 1B says that they have to follow the siting policy, but I'm wondering, this one's a doozy.
But yes, I mean, they could.
But they could just write a letter.
Yeah.
They could just write a letter the same way that we ask the common trench people, because we don't ask Comcast, for example, to send their common trench letter via certified mail, return receipt, request it. We just ask them to send a common trench letter and tell us whether you filed a common trench letter.
Right.
So maybe we just ask, I think, in the application, so excavation would then trigger common trench, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So, and excavation also triggers a dig safe number.
Yeah.
Yep?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have a question, does the work require excavation? And then if the answer yes, we ask for the dig safe number. Maybe we ask the question, have you sent a common trench letter to all? Is it utilities? No.
It would be.
To utilities?
Yes.
But actually that's not a utility. No. What are they classified? Yeah. Are they?
They're a public utility. They're a telecommunication provider.
Oh, okay.
That gives them the right to be on a utility-owned pole.
What do they call themselves? Neutral?
Well, they call themselves a neutral host.
Right.
But they're still a utility, no matter what they do.
Or, rather than asking that question, in the checklist, we can say if excavation, have you sent a comment? If excavation must provide common, but do we really want to see the common trench letter, or do we just want them to say that they?
We want them to see if they've reached out.
So we want a copy of the trench letter and to whom it was sent.
We've never asked. I mean, we've always taken it at the hearing. We've asked for them to,
say yes or no.
We would ask them, what really triggers a common trench? You know, how many feet? Where's it going? That's usually amongst the commission of what we actually require them when that triggers, and it will usually be if it's a whole street, if it's just a lateral going from, from a manhole
to a
building, we usually don't.
Right.
And if it's excavation, if they're going to be putting a small cell, they're going to excavate and put a new foundation and pole. Power could be, but then again, communication could not. I guess it'd be any excavation.
But would we want to see the common trench letter, or would we just want them to say, we have sent out a common trench letter?
I don't think we need to see it, do we?
No, as long as they're going to, within 6 months or 8 months, someone comes in and want to dig the street, and we say, well, you were notified. You should have been notified by.
But how do we have record of that if they just.
We don't.
So then get a copy of the common trench letter, or get an affidavit saying that.
That they were notified.
affidavit?
So.
Well, the letter and the response.
Huh?
I think the letter asks for a response, whether they respond or not. It says the letter would, they would say who they sent it out to, which is usually the list that they acquire from us. So they'd go up and get the list from whoever's on that, the utility list that we deal with.
Okay. So based on our policy, they would have to, for every small cell application, taking out the 64 whatever
yeah.
we are,
6409.
So taking those off the table, for every application, every small cell application, they have to notify all small cell companies that they are seeking to attach somewhere to see if the company wants to do attach with them.
Yes.
And then for all small cell applications, in addition to that, that require excavation for some type of conduit, they also have to notify utility companies.
Yes.
Yeah. But as they were saying, their needs change on a monthly, yearly basis. So who's to say
yeah.
that they may have to go in there 6 months from now? They don't know.
But the point is that we would have to require them when they submit the application. So maybe it's not, maybe what we suggest is maybe editing it to say, okay, strike that. If they are right, that having them contact someone, some other company, prior to filing an application gets into colluding and antitrust issues and whatever, those legal issues that they raise. Maybe if the problem is doing it before filing, maybe we just say, once you file the application, you have to send a common trench letter to all utilities if there's excavation, and a common trench or a common project letter. Why don't we just call it common trench anyways, or well, common project letter to all telecommunication utility companies? Or small cell companies, or whatever they're called, or some crap like that. Small wireless facilities.
Did that go against
facilities.
The antitrust laws that
that's,
they were talking about?
I don't know. I mean, that's for the lawyers to decide, but.
Yeah.
But my question was, I think they were raising that if we make them do it prior to, not once they have submitted. Right?
What's the difference, though?
I have no idea. I mean, because in theory, anyone that comes in, so if Steve has a small cell attached to pole 43, if I'm coming in the same area, I should be contacting Steve to try and hook up to his small cell. That's what we, that's literally the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Like if I'm going to be within 500 feet of Steve's small cell, the purpose is for me to first contact Steve and see if I can attach to his
yep.
to his thingy.
Right, rather than seeing that one intersection, you know, for an antenna on each corner. That's the whole idea, to try to consolidate what we're seeing.
So then it wouldn't really be me looking for people to attach to me, because quite frankly, what's the point? And like they said, they may not have the need today, but they may have it tomorrow or 6 months down the line. Maybe the issue here, if what we are trying to accomplish is that we don't have small cells at every which way, then maybe we suggest the attorneys look at maybe changing this something to the effect of the common trench letter is required for any excavation. But in terms of co-location, then the notice is to be sent to someone when they decide, I want to go to 831 Mass Ave, they have to look 500 feet either which way. And if there is another company that already has an attachment, they have to first reach out to that company and see if they can co-locate.
Okay.
I don't know. Is that, no. I mean, because I think that's what we're trying to accomplish
yeah.
with these co-locations, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. You're taking notes, right? Because you're explaining all of this. I'm just talking here.
I will listen to the audio and try to sift through it.
Okay.
Because I keep taking notes and then crossing out when you say, wait a minute. strike that.
If we ignore all of their legal challenges to this provision, do we like this provision as is? I personally don't. I think it's too much.
Too cumbersome.
Too cumbersome right now as is. Even for us.
I think it needs to be changed.
I guess my other point is, what's the purpose of this provision as is?
As written?
Mm-hmm.
You're still in 1C?
Yeah.
Well, it's like the touching, it is cumbersome. I mean, it goes all the way down to, you know, hiring a constable to reach out to somebody. What's the alternative?
Well, no, but I guess my question is, I mean, I know that you started working with the law department on this before I jumped in, and I think even before TJ jumped in. I'm trying to figure out what's the intent of 1C. What are we trying to accomplish with 1C?
Proof of receipt, right?
Proof of just notification.
But why? Why do we want them to notify? I guess that's my question. What's the need? I mean, when Verizon or NSTAR powers up a new... I mean, the only time we ask NSTAR to contact Comcast is if they're doing an excavation for a new building. But if they just basically insert a new breaker somewhere, we don't make them contact someone else, correct? No. So I guess that's my question with 1C. Are we just trying for them to notify each time they're going to attach? I guess my point is I don't understand. Is it so that we can encourage co-location?
It is to encourage co-location.
So if it's to encourage co-location, I think I sort of like it better if this is reframed so that we make, prior to filing an application, they look in the area, 500 feet, and if there's a small cell, that they reach out to that carrier and see if they can co-locate. But if an existing structure, it's not me calling you and saying, hey,
listen, I'm putting a structure up.
Do you want to co-locate?
Which would be against the antitrust laws.
According to them.
According to them, yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Give the attorney something.
But, I mean, we would want them to do that if they could, right?
Yeah.
If there was a way around that, that would be beneficial to the city.
For people to co-locate?
Yeah, no, but yeah. To reach out, even if there was no one else within 500 feet, you would reach out to Eversource or Verizon.
To see if they would want to jump in right now, because they might not be thinking about it.
Laws, yeah.
Okay.
But.
Okay. So let's say that this doesn't affect any laws. Then what you're saying is we keep this provision, but we get rid of the certified mail stuff. And the constable.
Yes.
Okay. And then it would just be a first-class mail letter. And then...
They mentioned certificate of mail.
Yeah. But do we... I quite frankly don't think the certificate of mail is necessary except for when we discuss next actual abutters. because again, like, a lot of these companies, even when they send the common trench letter, they send the common trench letter and no one ever responds anyway.
Right.
Like, they're not really good about...
No, unless they're sitting here in the room in a regular meeting that they want to participate, because it's always the same players.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so if this doesn't violate any laws, TJ is of the impression that it should stay but get rid of certified mail.
Yeah.
And then, Steve, what's your point on that?
Yeah, I agree with TJ.
Okay. And I don't disagree with either of you, but I think there also needs to be something, unless it's further down in the policy and I just don't remember it. But I think if there is already an existing small cell within 500 feet of where they're seeking, they should reach out to the company that has the small cell and try and co-locate.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't remember it in the policy, but I'm sure people will scream. We don't need it if you guys don't want it, but... Although I think we might talk about it later in co-location stuff. Okay. The next comment was about the 30 days and the application being withdrawn. And I think that's totally a law department issue. I have no strong feelings one way or the other on this one.
I agree.
So they didn't want it to be automatically withdrawn.
No. What they were saying was that, first of all, they don't have a duty to complete it within any timeline or restart the timeline. That was Extinet's argument.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Verizon also argued that we can't really deem something withdrawn when we don't know the applicant's intent, whether it is to withdraw it or not. I mean, quite frankly, this is a pain, an administrative pain, to have these lingering in our queues, because it's really hard when you have staff with hundreds of open items that honestly get lost in the shuffle. So I think if this withdrawn thing, if the legal minds agree that this can't be done, then I would suggest changing it to something like it'll get put on and denied. Because, like, for example, right now when we're in renewals, I have Dana, who's the staff member to which all of these basically go to, with over 100 pull and conduit applications that are just in his queue, slowing down everything else and making things get lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
And the system doesn't really separate in a way that is clear for him.
That's been a problem with this since the beginning of time, that they just linger with absolutely no movement. And no one's ever really enforced if you don't get your permits and start your work within X amount of days.
Yeah.
So I would just, if this way is not possible, based on the law, then I would really
should be something in
push with the attorneys to find us a way that we can just move these along to whether it's denied and then they need to refile or something else so that this can be moved along.
I agree.
What will be that time frame?
I mean, I don't know. This shot clock thing drives me crazy. but you know, I don't think it should be more. Like, if they didn't enter into a tolling agreement, like, for example, Exynet filed, I don't know, like 12 more applications. All of them don't have anything of what they need,
mm-hmm.
so they were all rejected right off the bat, and said, you know, you haven't completed and you're not complying with these siting policy or the siting policy, the whatever policy, mm-hmm. and the small cell policy. But these also take a long time to deny, because you can't really deny with saying this is incomplete. You have to specifically cite mm-hmm. where they're lacking. So, you know, if they don't respond, I think I like the 30 days, quite frankly. I mean, if it has to be extended to 45, I think that's fine, but I don't think it should be more than that. Unless they reach out and say, I'm getting this, I'm getting that. But if it's just sitting there in the queue, I mean, we have some there that have been 6 months.
But is 30 days too short?
For them not to even acknowledge?
I would say no, because, I mean, they're giving us 10 days.
Okay. 30 days.
Okay. Then 1E was the same issue with the certified mail. I mean, I think there needs to be a way, other than them filing an affidavit that they notified abutters, that when we get challenged by actual residents of Cambridge, that we can reach out to the company and say, you need to provide us proof that you gave service to these people. And whether it's with a certificate of mail that they hold on to for 2 years, or whether it's through the green cards, I don't care, but we need a way other than them just telling us that they did it.
I think the certificate of mail, I don't really, from what they have told us, makes the most sense, only because, I mean, we try to send these green cards out. More than likely, people are not signing.
Yeah.
And it definitely doesn't get there, because they're bringing it back undelivered or not at this address.
Right.
You know, if abutters and others are more apt to open up a letter if it's just delivered to them without it being certified. So, you know, with the green cards and all. So some sort of a affidavit or a certificate of mail.
Okay. If we go to the post office and ask the post office people about a certificate of mail and they're like, we don't do those, would we be okay with just them sending stuff first class mail and with submitting an affidavit?
Yeah. I would, yes.
Okay.
And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with our, you know, the issues that the utilities have been complaining about green cards in the past.
True.
Also.
We know that they also haven't always done it.
We also know that, yeah.
Well, maybe if we go the first class mail route, and an affidavit, I think we just have to make sure that the affidavit has listed all of the addresses. And our affidavit actually requires that they list all of the addresses to which they sent. Okay.
There's a time restriction. I mean, if we're doing green cards, how many times does the postman go back and forth before they send it?
They try to do it. They supposedly do it 3 times. Supposedly. But a lot of times, and I say this based on my experience, a lot of times they do once, and then they're like, you have to come pick it up at the post office, and then
and
people just don't pick it up.
And
nobody picks
it
up.
And that never happens.
And then that gets returned.
Was with the affidavit and a first-class mail.
Yeah.
I really think that's your best shot at reaching people.
Okay.
Because that way, too, you know, say I get one of these letters, I look at it and say, oh, it's from that. And I don't even look at it. But at least then the utility can say, well, you may not have read it, but I sent it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's your...
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I know that they complained about the giving notice of rescheduled hearing dates. I actually would like to push for that. I think these get continued so many times.
No, I agree, and if we're making it easier for them to do a first-class mail, I mean, they've complained about the cost and the green cards and all that. I mean, it's just as easy to run another first-class mail delivery to the same list that they already have.
Yep.
It's very minimal. Mm. There's no burden on them to just do it again.
Right. And then the other issue was... the condo associations, that when there's a lot of people, when there are big condominiums, I mean, if we go to first class mail, I don't know that makes a difference. I mean, it is costly, more costly to send it to 200 residents versus one condo association, but then the condo association takes on the cost of notifying the residents, so why not keep that on the person that actually is building and charging for these things, especially if we go to first class mail.
That's fair.
I believe so, yeah. Yes.
I mean, that could be something that we look at later down the line, too, that we could decide and make a policy separate of this in terms of notifications. But I did like the suggestion that we received that if we do adopt a policy that if they notify the condo association is sufficient, that that it'd be for condominiums of 20 or more residents. I did like that suggestion.
Was it you who offered that?
I was not. Oh. It was, oh my God, his name's escaping me.
Joe?
No. Brian Reporter.
Oh, Jayhawk.
Thank you.
Who?
John Hopkins.
Oh.
It was his recommendation.
Yeah.
Of how many, what constitutes say a common letter to an association.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I don't know how many units he said, but he said, you know, they're really small.
He said 20, and then somebody else said 10.
Yeah, I like 20. Okay, 1F, this is, again, the common project thing. Whatever that was. I think we already beat that.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1I... Romanette 2, the safety concerns or reliability concerns. I'm not really sure how this is too vague and could lead to discriminatory standard, but I also think that Romanette 1 and Romanette 3 would cover safety concerns and reliability concerns, because I think we're talking about the pole actually not being able to sustain the structure
mm-hmm.
here. So if that's the case, I mean...
You already covered?
Yeah.
I think so.
If it's not and it's something else, then I just ask that the lawyers clarify. But I think, the way I read it, I think this one has to do with the pole and the capacity of the pole and whether the structure meets the standards, which are Romanette 1 and 3, so... Mm-hmm. And if we can give them something so that they feel like they want on a certain point, then...
So it would be eliminated unless they can...
Well, unless this is something else. Something I mean, the way that I read it, if I read I completely, I think this is trying to break down all the situations that it could be. But when I think of safety concerns or reliability concerns, I'm assuming... that it's that the pole can't or the structure can't sustain
mm-hmm.
that the engineering standards are not sustained and quite frankly the Romanette 6, 7, 8 the very last one says or any other legal valid reason so
you could just strike Romanette 2.
I would think so.
I think it's covered up and down there.
Yeah. I mean, unless this is really something that we are not getting, and then it would just have to be explained more for us and everyone else, I would say.
I agree.
And then in that same one, six, this is the more convenient location. This I have a real issue with, but I guess, I don't know. I just want... super clarity from the lawyers that we can never deny an application based on anything other than the pole not being able to sustain it or design. Because I think that's what they're arguing. They're arguing that we can never say that if they come here and they say we're attaching to this pole because we need it, that we can never say that's not true. I mean, that's what they were all arguing. They were saying that the commission has literally no jurisdiction to determine whether a small cell is needed or not. And that's why this Romanette should be stricken. Because we can't really ask or determine whether there's a better location unless we say no because that pole is leaning or whatever, which in theory they could say, well, we'll replace the pole
and fix it, yeah.
So I mean, I just need super clarity.
So we
on
couldn't
that.
Deny an application if it had underground conduit going to a pole that the street was newly paved, or
no, because they'd have to mitigate the paving.
Mitigate the paving, yeah.
And you know, the FCC is going to tell, you know, they are that we don't have a right to tell them no.
I guess that's what I'm looking clarification on. So for example, sometimes we deny new conduit routes because we're like, no, there's a moratorium on that street.
Right.
So.
Well, we ask them to look for another route.
Yeah. And then, you know, let's say that they're like, no, this is the pole we chose and this is the route that we're going. And then, so then the question is, can we not deny that based? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. It seems, based on their arguments, that that's what it is. But that's what I'm looking. I mean, I don't know if that's how you guys understood it. I thought this gave us some.
I mean, this just isn't a small cell issue. It's that could be considered a granted location. Same thing, right?
But let's say, yes, let's say we do not grant your conduit to go down, you know, this juncture of Mass Ave, because we just paved it yesterday.
Eversource, Mount Auburn, and Dunster. They come to us, we said no. Go back, look for another route. Well, they're going to come back, I'm sure, this month and say we have to go there.
Well, they have determined from what they've, that they there is no alternative.
There is no alternative route. They have a generator that's going on the sidewalk in a couple of days, and it's going to be hot to trot to get that conduit in. And that street's been paved 2 times in the last 4 years.
Right.
So then let's say that we say, no, there's an alternative where you can go on the sidewalk, let's say, for example. The question is, and what I think I need clarification, what I personally need clarification on, is whether we can say no or whether we're stuck with whatever they give us because of this FCC regulation. I guess that's where I'm not clear on. Based on what they're arguing, I mean, let's say that pole 37 is at the middle of the street,
mm-hmm.
and to get power source to pole 37, they have to pave the street, and you're like, I just paved that street last week, so no. And, you know, we say pole 27 is at the corner, and you can come off at the other, you know, you can power it through the other street, and you can attach that pole. Can we deny that application? Based on their arguments, they're saying no.
Right.
So I don't know if that's true, and that's what I would need clarification on. If that's the case, then I think that there are some provisions here that need to be cleaned up. But if that's not the case, then I just need something like really clear for us that we can say, no, that's not true.
And that would come from the law department, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't. I mean, technically, we don't know.
Yeah. So, if the cases that we can deny based on reasons like that, then this Romanette would stay. And then.
Romanette 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would just say, so that they don't say that we're doing this because of coverage reasons, which supposedly we can't do, then if that's the case, if we can't say because of coverage or whatever or that stuff, then for this Romanette to be valid or to stay so that it's clear that it's because it's a more convenient or favorable location, then take out the such that the applicant may densify its network. But whatever, the lawyers can finesse that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow. 1K, I mean, I think that was pretty clear, but I think the lawyers can clean that up if they think it's unclear.
Not the meeting date, but the...
But the date the decision is written. I mean, I think it's pretty clear as is. I think they were just being petulant.
Mm-hmm.
the tolling agreement, blah, blah, blah. We just dealt with that.
Yes.
They raised the issue again of the withdrawal clause there, but, I mean, the lawyers will look at that. 2C, oh, the license agreement. They're just looking for the city's license agreement. And again, I understood this, that the license agreement would only be for city-owned poles.
That was a question, and it's it was explained to me that it's the license to use the rights of the public way. That's why they need a license. So in other words, just the, you know, if they're running an overhead wire to it, that license is for that. If it overhangs a pole, it's air rights.
Mm-hmm.
So they need the license, and that's how it was explained to me.
But here it says, for installations on proposed on non-city-owned poles, they provide a license agreement showing approval and authority to such structure from the owner, as well as the city's,
yeah. Which I think that needs some clarification. My opinion is if they're getting a license for that pole from the utility, it's not the city's pole. It's the utility's pole, which they're all jointly on.
And it is our authority that grants them the grant of location elsewhere.
For the attachment.
Yeah. And then, for example, Comcast, we don't make them sign a license agreement with the city to go underground or go with anywhere else, right?
We do not.
Yeah. Okay. And then I think we also, at least also for administrative purposes, we also need clarification on the shot clock potential violations that they raised if this license agreement is something that they are negotiating with the city. I mean, because the way it reads, this license agreement would not be executed by us or done by us.
No, it'd be between.
Yeah. So, you know, so unless, you know, if they're doing a standard license agreement with all these companies, like right off the bat, regardless of whether they have a structure or not, and then they do addendums. But, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess we need to
learn.
So
any application that comes in needs a license agreement with the city.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's deemed incomplete.
Except what they were saying. They were saying that if this is a pre-approval or a pre-application step, it already triggers the shot clock. But how would we know?
Right.
Because if they're negotiating with the powers that be for this license agreement, we would never know. And in theory, they submit the application today, and if we find that it's incomplete in some other way, and they're like, 10 days have already expired, how would we know?
Is that agreement per location?
So the way it reads right now, it's per location. What they were saying is that they were suggesting that it's done like in other communities, that it's just a standard license agreement that they enter into like today, let's say. And then as we grant locations, the addendum is amended. Yeah.
On a particular street.
Okay.
But that it's not on a case-by-case basis. It's basically TJ Shea enters into this agreement with the city, and then that's it, regardless.
As you apply for more locations, you add them to the addendum to that.
But that there's no delay in adding them to the addendum because the agreement's already there and the agreement's not changing because it's a standard agreement in theory. Okay, so we'll let them be. 2D, Romanet 4, we changed. Okay.
Yes.
Well, we're going to request the change. Okay. 2E and the areas it will service. So that last clause, they question our authority to whether or not we can actually ask them to show what areas their small cell is going to service. So I guess that's a question for the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
But something that if they say no, we're keeping it, that I would just want clarification that we have authority to request it and how far we can go in that authority. 2F, just that the companies that are self-insured are not considered in that one.
Yeah.
That's pretty straightforward. I don't know that I have anything. 2G, the why the location is superior to other similar locations. Again, this is what they question,
coverage,
whether we have the authority.
Yeah.
So let's say that their argument that we don't have authority to ask why this location is better than others, or that we don't have authority to deny based on that. Do we really want to know why that location versus any other location?
If we don't have the authority to deny, then what does that really do for us?
Yeah. So I guess my sense would be, why go through the hoop of getting information on something that doesn't affect our process one way or the other? I mean, we can certainly ask it at the hearing, why this location and whatever, and they can answer. But if there's no reason, so that we have something on the record as to why they chose something. But, you know, they kept saying sometimes their client doesn't tell them why one pool versus the other. Just that they looked at the area and this is the one that they chose as the better
analysis.
One, blah, 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 blah.
And they've been pretty specific as far as how far away these small sites, when they do their analysis, that it's usually not far from the best location from their customer. So
yeah, so I think my recommendation would be that if we don't have the authority to deny based on location X versus location Y in terms of superiority,
yep,
then my recommendation would be to get rid of G.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so the installation will not accommodate the public way. We already have that in the detailed drawings and what they're going to give us. The visual aspect they already have in the detailed plans that they're going to submit to us. And the proximity to buildings, we already have that in the plans. So I think this one,
take it off.
I would recommend that if we can't deny based on any answer provided to G, then I think we take it off. Because I think, anyways, the visual aspects of it we'll get with the other plan, so
mm-hmm.
it's just superfluous at that point. The co-locate, we already talked about that, and we'll get some information on that. 2I, the affidavit from the licensed professional, the Romanet 1, they mentioned that the license, there's no such requirement to be licensed by the FCC. I guess that's something for the lawyers to look at.
I don't know.
And then Romanet number 3, I think this is the same as the denial. I don't think they read it properly, but I think if it can be clarified, it's just, we're just getting them to say that it complies with the FCC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then maybe just...
And everything else, if the FCC, if they're by FCC standards,
yeah,
and we can't really go
yeah.
beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say, whatever. I mean, the lawyers can look at the detail on that one, but I mean, I don't have an issue. And then Romanet 7. How we'll address the need in the city, that's the same thing, the coverage
mm-hmm.
stuff. I mean, if we don't have the authority to deny based on that, why would we want that information anyway? If we can deny based on that, or if that's something we can consider to grant or deny or give conditions on, then I would like to keep it. And then same on the last Romanet there. Mm-hmm. 3A, we changed to March. Prohibitions. Oh, the traffic signal. 4D.
I mean, that's probably a legal decision with...
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that there is a particular... I mean, I think we try to not include it. And I think at the time it might have been with the traffic department, and it was just thrown, it was put in there.
Okay.
So I don't know what our legal basis is for that.
Okay. Something for them to look at then. Then we came to 5C, the siting requirements, and Romanette 8, about the 6 feet away.
And the 15 feet.
And the 15 feet and so all of that.
The 15 feet should be from an intersection, not curb line, right? Is that what we're determining?
I believe so, yeah. Yes. Because otherwise there wouldn't be any place.
Knows.
Right.
Okay. 15 feet from the intersection. And then...
Doesn't it explain that on... was that third? 17? It says, new installation shall not be placed where they obstruct sight line of any intersecting street or public way. A minimum of 15 feet shall be maintained. Between the new installation and the outside edge of the street, curb, or public alley.
That very well could be it, but this one reads contrary to that.
Right.
So they would have to, there would need clarification on that.
And would that be a new installation?
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. They kept asking that it wasn't clear whether this was for new installations or existing installations.
Right.
But I think that's also because for, I think they also raised that because, I mean, do we have any 15-foot sidewalks?
Yes.
Do we have many 15-foot sidewalks?
No. Maybe Central Square.
Yeah, Central Square.
Yeah.
Kendall Square.
Some.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, anyways.
So is it getting back to the 15 feet? Is it 15 feet from the intersection at the curb line or the center of the street? Like, how are we going to judge the 15 feet?
I don't know.
Be specific. Right. Would it be basically the curb line?
I would think that it was 15 feet from the from an intersecting curb.
Intersecting curb, okay.
But this is my thing. So the installation.
Wait, if it's an existing pole,
the installation, the way that it is defined here, the installation is the small cell.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And or conduit.
I don't think that's how it's defined here, though. Let me see. I might be wrong about that. Installation. Small cell wireless facilities, including communication equipment and related infrastructure. Okay. Within the public right-of-way is called an installation. So it does include the conduit. I think it needs to change because anyways, that would be, I mean, if you do 15 feet from the edge of the curb, then you're talking about a very limited amount of places that these things can go in, right?
Right. So it's 15 feet from the, will be the right terminology.
I mean, but do we, I guess my question is, we have a whole bunch of other things that say, I guess my question is, do we really need the 15 feet there? Because if they can't be placed less than 6 feet away from the edge of a driveway of a residential or commercial property, and then somewhere else we talk about the amount of space.
New poles, right? New poles and conduit.
Well, it doesn't say.
But it doesn't say.
It doesn't say.
It says all installations, so in theory this is for...
Should say no new installations.
Well, in theory this is for any installation that comes, I'm assuming, after, when was it that we adopted the policy? September? No. June 15th or whatever? Because I think this was also in the current one. I mean, we can't really tell people to take off installations they would, quote-unquote, be grandfathered in for wireless, for currently existing small cells. We can't go back. But ones that are coming up, I mean, because I think we talk about, and I'm not quite sure where, I think when we talk about the equipment, the shroud, and the antenna, that's where we talk about how far they can be from a window or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, what's the purpose of the 15 feet? What are we trying to protect here with 15 feet?
In my mind, you didn't want a new pole within 15 feet of the intersection.
That's what I understood also.
Okay, so you don't want any new poles.
Yeah.
New poles, correct.
But, so then that, I think, my suggestion would be that little whatever just be made something separate. Because no installation shall be, and then the 6 feet away from the edge of a driveway or a commercial, are you also talking about
new
poles
pole.
There? So then it shouldn't be no installation, it should be no new poles.
Correct. No new installations or no new installation structures. I mean, because if we have a pole within those limits, why can't they put their equipment on it?
They could, technically.
They could.
Okay. So then it just has to be clear that what we're talking about here is that new poles.
Poles are structures, right?
Okay. So no new poles or structures. The more I think about it, the more this section with definitions makes sense. Because I think...
There's a big difference between... I think you have three categories here. You have wood, utility-owned wood poles. You have city-owned poles. And then you have, new installations.
But new installations, when you talk about new installations, you're talking about poles or structures.
A small cell structure. It doesn't have to be a light on it. It's a small cell. So they want to come into the city. They're either going to put their equipment on a wood pole,
mm-hmm.
they're going to put it on a city-owned street light,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to build their own structure.
Okay.
And a lot of this, a fair amount of it, it's really geared towards a new installation. When you talk about the 6 feet, the 15 feet in a straight, the one before that is where possible, installation shall be in a straight line with existing utility poles. So that right away tells me that if it needs to be in line with existing utility poles, that means it's a brand new pole.
Right.
Okay. So then this one would just have to be cleaned up to say no new installations, understanding that the new installation would be a small cell, whether it's a structure or a new pole.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the 15 feet should just be clarified to be at an intersection.
From an intersection.
Yeah, so you don't want to put a new pole within 15 feet of an intersection.
And should we note that the new pole has to be ADA compliant?
Four. Shall be considered ADA regulation installation shall not obstruct the ADA access. So it's four right above that.
Okay.
And that covers pretty much everything.
Yeah.
As far as the ADA goes.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Then in that same section, Romanet 12, this is where they say 60 days being informed of relocation is too short of a notice.
When we're reconstructing a street as well as with all utilities, I mean, that process starts years prior to. I mean, it's not something that happened in 60 days.
But could there be any special circumstances where the city does work on an expedited schedule that, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a situation that would be a good example.
The only expedite, I mean, not really.
No.
I mean, if you're doing an intersection, that still is thought of well in advance and all the utilities are notified prior to, or while design is underway.
Right.
You know, we're doing River Street. I mean, everybody, that's gone on for years.
Right. I know we have
so I don't know that the 60 days, I mean, it is short notice for them to do something, whomever it be, any utility.
Do we need a timeline? Could this just be the way that it's written, say applicants shall remove their insulation at their own cost upon notice by the city and prior to the redevelopment or change? Because I think what this is getting to is, and that would give the city some wiggle room in terms of whether there's an emergency. But also, like Steve said, it might be something that's in the budget for 2022, and they received notice of it today, but, I mean, in theory, they don't have to do it until 2022.
Steve, what about, like, the water break yesterday down on First Street? They were possibly had to take down a street light pole.
Right.
What if a small cell was on a street light pole? How would that work? And we had to take it down to fix the water meter.
This is talking about redevelopment, but in an emergency, they would need to support it like any other structure, like any other utility.
Okay.
Well, anyways, if we want a timeline, I agree. I mean, we can always give them more time. I don't know, the 60 days.
I agree. 60 days. Nothing happens in 60 days.
I wrote here 120, but I think they said 180, a minimum of 180. I don't have an issue with that.
I don't either.
I also don't have an issue with just taking the timeline and just putting upon notice and prior to the redevelopment or change in the area.
Yeah, and coordination yeah. with the project.
Yeah.
Especially when it specifically says planned a redevelopment or a change to a street. There
yeah.
shouldn't be a limit on that.
But they need to work with the city on emergency
need
situations.
Yeah.
And then Romanet 14, this is for the water department, about the shot clock and whether this pre-certificate of appropriateness is getting us there. The next one is what we already discussed. Now, 6 pole designs and overall height. Everyone had issues with this one about the heights and stuff.
Yes.
Does it make sense to go with like an allowable percentage?
I would think that, I mean, it says, for instance, D says any insulation at the site of an existing pole shall not extend the overall height of a pole more than 30 feet high or by more than 10% of existing pole height. I mean, all of our poles are 30 feet high. And I think that.
All city and utility poles?
No.
Or just city poles?
Utility poles?
All wood utility poles between say 35 and 40, between 35 and 45.
And then the city ones are all 30 already?
All the city streetlights, the highest poles we have are, well, the majority of them are 30 feet. The only taller ones are like this spread out. Central Square, the tall ones there, they're like 40 feet. But it, the majority of them are all at 30 feet.
I mean, I would argue that one could read this saying that it can't be higher than 30 feet from the current height.
There'll never be an installation.
Mm.
No, I'm saying I would creatively look at this if I were on the other side of the table and say, oh, so you're saying that on a 30-foot pole I can't go above 60 feet, which obviously is not what we want, but...
I think a percentage works the best, the 10%. I mean, because if it's a 30-foot pole, then you're 3 feet with an antenna. You know, that's what they're all under 3 feet now. Or if it's a 40-foot, you get a 4-foot antenna.
Do you know what the FCC one is doing? Because I know that a couple of them mentioned about volumetric, and do they mention in terms of height or no?
I would have to look at it. I don't recall. And on F, it says no installation shall be higher than 30 feet or more than 10% higher than other adjacent poles, whichever is less. So that would almost push them to put side-mounted antennas everywhere rather than pole top.
Yeah,
and we would rather see pole top.
Yeah, which we don't want.
No.
I guess my question is, in utopia, what do you want your poles to look like? What's your utopia? I mean, I don't personally have an opinion on this because it's not my area of expertise, so I'm asking you, and TJ, you're more than welcome to jump in.
I don't really have.
But in your utopia, without looking at this, what would be your ideal world in these installations?
It would be a pole top antenna, not to exceed 10% of current height.
But the 5G are going to have to... It won't be pole top, right? They said they're going to have three, like,
they
shrouds.
Could be, no, they'd be pole. Well,
they
top, utopia
is
pole top, that everything looks the same and it's nice and slim.
Yeah.
5G, from what I've only seen recently, are they going to be hanging panels
right
around, that same pole. Yeah.
I can hear it now.
Oh.
The outcry.
Okay. So I guess my recommendation.
I moved out of utopia a long time ago.
I guess my.
But I'm heading there. But I am heading there in that direction.
I guess my recommendation.
With me.
Yes.
My recommendation would be to forward your utopia to the lawyers and tell them that if this can be reworked, so that your utopia is covered, that means that we're gonna get it.
Yes.
But I think that makes sense, that we say this is what we would like to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I think it's too restrictive, and I think if it's challenged, we think we're going to end up losing anyways, to be honest with you.
Say again?
It's too restrictive.
It's too restrictive for what they want to put on top of the pole.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't work if you have to go whichever is less. So you have a 30-foot pole, then you're pushed onto a side-mounted antenna.
What's this whip antenna design?
The whip antenna?
It says a whip antenna design.
Yeah, yeah. That's the whip antenna design.
It's an A. The antenna on these poles shall be of a whip antenna design, which antenna shall be no higher than 30 inches high by 2 inches in diameter and have an antenna mount no more than 45 inches by 4.5.
Those antennas will only cover one carrier. And that's what they've been installing in Boston, and I think the community development was pushing towards the whip antenna.
What's the whip antenna, though? What does that look like?
It's It's very long and slender.
Like a CB antenna?
It's like a CB antenna, yeah.
But this is also the one that they were saying that the...
They don't want it.
That the dimensions are too small?
Yes, because it's only going to accommodate. Crown Castle would not want it because they can only use it for one carrier. So that, and it can't be used for co-location.
So doesn't that defeat the whole purpose?
It does.
Well, it defeats our purpose of co-location.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it doesn't defeat the whole purpose and
of putting
aesthetic.
One, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So co-location and aesthetics don't go together, really?
Well, aesthetic of seeing, a whip antenna on all four corners rather than one. Only one everybody co-locating in on one corner, so you're not seeing a barrage of antennas. Or structures, I should say. I don't have a picture of that.
Okay. Well, anyway, again, they all mentioned about how the challenges on that and all that stuff, so I'm sure the law department will be looking into that. But in terms of pole-top antennas, not touching that one, then it would be not to exceed 10% of the height. That would be your utopia?
Yes.
Okay.
For all poles, right?
Wood poles, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, so if that's your utopia, do you care about what's in A and what's in the second portion of D? I guess you care about this whip antenna design.
I don't care about the whip antenna design.
And do we have an opinion as to whether we think aesthetics versus co-location, which one should be prioritized in the policy?
Depends who you ask.
I'm asking us.
I know. I would say co-location.
I think they kind of run hand in hand.
You think aesthetics and co-location run hand in hand?
Well, co-location will be larger, but you're not seeing, aesthetically, you're not seeing more of these sites right in front of you, aesthetically.
But I guess, yes, true. But I guess my question is, if we would have to prioritize something,
yes,
as a policy matter, as the commission,
yeah,
what would we prioritize?
Co-location.
Okay. Which would mean that in certain circumstances, like for example, A would have to be sacrificed because you couldn't have co-location
with
such
a
small
antenna. Correct. Unless technology changes,
mm-hmm,
and what they're telling us, it's
changing next week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They said a year and a half.
Verizon said sooner.
Who?
Verizon said sooner.
Yeah.
Oh, they did? I didn't hear her.
Like 6 months, I think?
Yeah.
They've already installed some in Boston.
In Boston.
Which I have to get over there to take a look.
Killing me. All right. Roman numeral seven. I'm sorry. Equipment, cabinet, equipment shroud, antenna, and antenna shroud. Finally, I understand Extinet's issue with the word cabinet. And it's basically that not every structure has a cabinet. And so the word cabinet should be taken off. They keep... I hadn't understood that from their previous. I mean, again, the lawyers can look at this, but I have no issue with removing the word cabinet or adding equipment, cabinets or equipment, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This AT&T thing, I think, because we use the word installation for not only the small cell but also any power. I think that's why they didn't get the shall be located underground thing. Because what they're saying is that no small cell can be put underground, so it would be, it would, you know, common sense says that, so why are you making us certify that each and every time?
Oh, I see, yeah.
But I think what they're not getting is that the installation, per se, when we talk in the policy about installation, so I think this is where I am starting to veer towards the side that I agree that there might need to be a section of definitions that we might actually have to break down installation into, like, different types of installation, like small cell installation, like small cell with, you know, underground conduit installation or something like that. I don't know. Or maybe just talk about small cell and conduit as separate things rather than a whole big word of installation. But I don't know. I mean, again, that's something that the lawyers can look at.
So what if a small cell was attached to a big belly? Does our policy?
What's a big belly?
The solar-powered trash cans.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's only talking about city-owned poles, right? Currently?
City-owned structures. Well, does this policy say city-owned poles? Or
to what? No, this policy applies to any small cell.
Yeah, policy regarding small cell wireless installations on public ways.
I've heard that they're talking about attaching small cells to big bellies.
Well, what they've talked about is putting the electronics in a something similar that looks like a big belly,
right,
then put the pole next to it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the big belly, it's going to replicate a big belly, but that's where the electronics are.
Okay.
But there will still be a pole next to it.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
Where was the section on the size? We were talking about it rather than going by a particular size, going to a volumetric size. I thought I saw a notation here on that.
I think Joe Shannon said that.
They all said that.
I don't know what the advantage is.
It's in 6. Well, they're saying that the way that it's
now
written in FCC in terms of volumetric, it's much larger than the way that it's written in our policy.
And we don't.
It is.
And that does not help putting two parties on one unit.
Yeah.
With the size.
Well, if the FCC, well, I don't know, can we deny, I mean, if, I think the FCC is saying that it can't be any larger than 28 cubic feet. I just have to get, that's a figure that I heard from Crown Castle. But that's huge. I think our cab, I think when we designate something as being, I think 36 by 18 by 12.
Yeah, that's in 7B.
Yeah, that's only 4 cubic feet, approximately. So their current cabinets out there right now, which are out in operation, particularly Crown Castle, their original deployment, which holds 2 carriers, is about 4 cubic feet. And the large ones that they've been putting out there are about 20 cubic feet.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why they've been holding off, because they literally, there's no way that they can comply with this policy as written.
not what, what they're currently doing, and they can increase it, what are they, by 50%?
I can't remember. You mean with the 6409?
Yes.
I think it's
no more than 50%.
Which I think, with their installations at four cubic feet, and they've been expanding them to 20 cubic feet, is a little bit more than 50%.
But they don't have 4 cubic feet right now.
They do.
The ones that they're extending?
Yes. They've gone from recent, from the measurements I've taken recently, unless I need to be, needs to be clarified, is that they've gone from a 4 cubic foot installation to a 20 cubic foot installation.
But I don't know, I mean, I don't remember the, I don't remember it as a percentage. I remember it as they can't exceed
28 cubic feet?
Amount. That's how I remember it. I don't remember it as a percentage.
Then they would be within it, because I've heard numbers at 28 cubic feet maximum. So maybe that's where they're only at 20 right now.
No. I don't
know. I'm not opposed to a volumetric size. That's, you know,
yeah.
That doesn't, size is size, whether the...
Before we move to volumetric size and that stuff,
okay.
7A.
Is there a meeting in here?
No, I just wanted to give Steve something, actually.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I just wanted to give you the
is it a bag of money, or is it just...
No, I wish for one. It's fiber for Tommy and Mark.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Thank you. The 7A stuff... I think we already covered this in terms of telling them that we prefer underground conduit already in other portions of the...
Underground cabinets or underground equipment?
Well, it looks like, I mean, when we're talking about underground, I mean, I'm assuming we're not talking about the small cells. We know that small cells can't go underground. We're talking about the conduit for these small cells, correct?
No, I think...
Are we
talking about the equipment, which at this point it's not technically feasible for them to do that. There is nothing that they've developed that can go underground, is what they're all saying, and I agree.
Okay. So are we really asking then for every single one small cell application to have an affidavit from a licensed engineer saying the technology has not been developed to put small cells underground?
Thanks, Dan.
No problem.
I mean, that seems like a colossal waste of time.
It is.
Okay. So I would recommend that we either get rid of A or...
No, I think we need to get... I would recommend that we get rid of it. It's just...
Okay.
The industry right now does not have electronics that are going to be mounted underground.
Okay. Then I would suggest that we get rid of A. And if it was inserted here by the lawyers so that, you know, thinking ahead in terms of advances in technology, then I think it just should be changed to when the technology exists, then this has to be done. But
correct, yeah.
Otherwise, I agree that this is just, it would just be red tape at this point to have them do that. Okay, now we can go to 7B and below. And you were saying that you're not opposed to volumetric size.
I am not opposed to it, no.
And that would be throughout this entire stuff, right? Mm-hmm. If that's that's B through I. These are all talking about sizes and stuff, right?
Some are talking about heights, but more, it's more for B.
The volumetric is just for the shroud or cabinet.
Just for the shroud,
not the antenna.
Not the antenna.
That would just be
so not for E?
No, because we talked about the antenna being 10%, Well, again, you do have size involved there, but I've only seen the volumetric be applied to the cabinet, not the cabinet, because we struck that, the shroud.
Shroud.
The equipment shroud.
Okay. And then how would these, like, for example, like H, how would these be changed, if at all, based on your 10%, where it says antenna enclosures that are more than 25 feet high shall not be wider than 150%? I mean, I guess, are all these numbers going to change, or will need to change if we go with the 10% stuff?
2500, no. No. Because it's more than 20 feet has to be no wider than 150% of the diameter of the pole. So the 10% would not impact that, because that's the width, not the height.
That's volumetric, though. Are we talking on the shroud, right?
No, this is the antenna enclosure.
On
the other one is the equipment enclosure.
What's an antenna enclosure?
What you see on the top of the pole. So you have your equipment, and then from your equipment you go to the antenna.
So
whether it be
the
side
antenna
mounted
would be the percentage, but now we're talking the width of the antenna would be the wider.
On the 150%, yeah. So in other words, you have a wood pole or a pole.
Yeah.
So at the top of that pole, you could not exceed 150%, is what it says here.
Okay.
And then as far as the overall height, that would be considered in the 10%.
Right.
So you, on a 30-foot pole, you couldn't exceed 3 feet, mm-hmm. or, and no more than 150%.
Pole. Okay.
I think that's pretty consistent to what we see out there now.
Okay.
That's been installed up and down Memorial Drive on those 1907s.
So I need to be changed.
In theory, or would it? Because this is talking about less than 25 feet high.
It's still a percentage, though, right, for the antenna? 10%?
But the I don't know. This is a Steve thing. I am completely confused by this.
So it looks like depending on the height of the poles, we're giving a maximum dimensional tolerance, right?
I think it was more geared towards the acorns and the pedestrian scale lighting, so that it not be as large when at a lower height.
The width of the antenna.
Yes. Yeah.
So should we have like a little chart saying poles 25 feet or less will be up to so many inches in diameter, and then still keep the 10% height for the antenna? Make it kind of clear cut.
Ideally, it'd be nice to see a pole with a outline of you got to fit it in here type of thing, you know what I mean?
I think I needs to be rewritten.
Which one?
I. Yeah. Because we're talking diameter and height of the antenna. The height we've already discussed, 10% maximum
mm-hmm.
pole.
Yep.
But if we just had a chart based on the height of the pole to tell them the maximum, you know, diameter of the antenna width or whatever, that would be helpful.
Well, it actually says, I mean, if he says antenna mounted on top of installations that are less than 25 feet shall be a whip antenna and be no greater than 30 inches, which is about 10% of a 25-foot pole.
But the whip antennas don't help with co-location, right?
They do not. Not the technology that's there right now. So then it'd be no greater than 2 inches in diameter. But we don't know. You know, we've given 150% diameter of the pole, and all the poles are a different diameter. So I don't know how we can put.
So are you against having 150% diameter with poles less than 25 feet?
Depends on the pole.
So the 25.
I mean, you have an acorn. The biggest thing with they wanted to stay away from the acorns, unless it's a whip antenna.
So you'd have to have a whip antenna on the acorns.
That's what they were trying to accomplish, rather than having a big barrel in the middle.
How many acorns do we have? You know, a lot, right?
Not really. I mean, we have predominantly in Harvard Square, Cambridge Street, but they're only 12-foot poles, so they wouldn't put anything there anyways.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't match anything, because they'd have to make it a double, and there are no doubles on Cambridge Street. So the largest impact here,
Harvard Square,
is Harvard Square.
And then based on the way that it's now, then we'd have whip antennas on every pole in Harvard Square versus 2 to 3 installations in Harvard Square.
Yes.
A lot of this
came about just from what other communities, particularly Boston, as they started installing the double acorns with the big antennas, and they changed the whole design to a whip antenna. So it was kind of following what others were doing to keep the aesthetics of this big antenna in between the acorns.
Would also, they had also asked about the reasonableness of how the colors will match. I mean, I think in terms of these sizes, again, I defer to you two because this is more in your realms than mine, but I think we have to be careful on becoming too restrictive. Because then we're going to end up with, I mean, if we're already, our hands are already tied enough with the FCC policy not allowing us to deny certain applications for a variety of reasons. If we're also limiting ourselves to having a very specific type of antenna that will just create more small cells being out there, then we're just going to run into that issue where we've heard all the residents complain how they don't want to see one of these on every pole, and quite frankly, I don't know that we want to either. But I don't know. But in that same vein, I think that would get us also to the point made by Verizon saying that in this policy, one thing that's lacking is a waiver provision that allows us to say, in this particular case, we're not going to do this. So I get the whip.
Or we can do that, one or the other.
Yeah, I get the whip antenna issue, but if, for example, if in Harvard Square we're seeing that to ask them to do whip antennas would mean that Brattle Street, every pole would have a whip antenna versus just one pole having a small cell, then I think that waiver provision would be a good one to have at that point. So that's just something for the lawyers to consider, I guess, at this point. But I think it's clear that our intent and our preferred policy is co-location versus
aesthetics
versus skinny antennas. So 8A is also the color thing that they mentioned about not always being able to match, and just, that's just a legalese. Mm-hmm. I think with reasonable, the word reasonable somewhere in there,
yeah,
it should be
yeah.
taken care of. The 9A, the also the shot clock issue, also with the additional permits. Just get guidance from the law department on that. Also 9B about adding FCC. Law department can look at that. Then the general, the other general comments that I extracted was the, which is all over peppered, is the pre-application and pre-approval procedures. And then the node-by-node license agreement stuff. And the waiver provision. Then the 6409. What did you guys think about that?
So 6409 is when they have an existing small cell and they're just trying to modify it, correct?
Correct. So does it need to go to a public hearing? I don't think so. But if they're going to be adding 5G antennas on it and everything else.
Well, that I can't remember how they, I think it's a substantial change or a material change. I can't remember, there's the FCC has a...
I like to see what that says.
Yeah.
6409, just to determine, you know, whether it's just administratively or needs a hearing.
Okay, so I think that if the FCC regulation says that within these parameters,
maybe
the commission has no authority to deny, then I would push for a provision in our policy to say that, and to say that those will be approved administratively,
mm-hmm.
and have the parameters set
sure.
out.
And then if it's outside of those parameters, it would need to go.
It would need a new application
yeah.
and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we also have to ask the law department to look into, you know, even if it's administrative, what fees would apply. Is it the 500 and the 270 fee and all that stuff, or what kind of fees apply? Because even though it's done administratively, we still have to collect the fees.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think rather than creating a whole new application, I think we would just add a question to our current application. Is this a petition based on 6409? That would be one of the first questions. And if they say yes, then a whole bunch of the other questions would be removed,
mm-hmm.
and then it would just go automatically.
Right.
It would just be a conditional question that would only trigger certain other additional questions. Okay. Anything else that I missed?
So on the $1,000 for a new pole,
yep.
Does that mean a new pole? So in other words, so we have and this is in regards to city-owned poles. So they come in, they want to put a small cell in a particular location. But to do that, they need to take the pole down that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Put up a similar replica and also dig the foundation and put a foundation that's going to hold that new pole. Is that considered a new pole?
So based on my conversations, no.
It's not a new pole?
It's not a new pole. If it's replacing a pole that's there, it's not a new pole. This is based on what I asked that same question, and that's the answer that I got. This would be a completely new structure. So, you know, on this corner of Mass Ave and Prospect, there is no pole, and they're putting a pole there.
Okay.
Not that they are taking the pole that's currently right now at the corner of Prospect and Mass Ave and just duplicating it, replicating it, reinstalling a new one.
Okay.
So it's more or less a new location, not a new pole?
Yeah.
So if they're asking for a new location, new granite location, then it's considered new. Otherwise, if they can take out what's there existing and replace a completely new top to bottom foundation, a conduit, everything, it's...
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else? Anything else we need clarification on from the lawyers?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
So this will, we'll give it to them to clarify, and what's the time frame?
So I have already given the law department the same document that we've had, that we've been working off of in terms of the comments that we received, as well as the draft of the minutes, which summarized what we heard during October 17th meeting. My intent is to follow up with the law department and give them sort of a glossary. That's why I was asking for your utopia and what we need clarification on, so that we can tackle it onto this with the intent that we will get their counsel and advice and revisions by October 25th. That means next Friday, which means that then we post that together.
This Friday.
Not this Friday.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this Friday.
Yeah, this Friday.
Is it?
Yeah.
Also next Friday. This Friday is next Friday.
Next Friday is the 31st.
Yeah.
Halloween's a Thursday, isn't it?
Or Halloween's the 30th, yeah.
Yeah, Halloween's the
31st.
Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that we would have it by this Friday, so that it can be posted with the agenda, and we can adopt our revised policy by the 31st. So that people can actually file applications by November, and we can hear them on November 21st.
And if that doesn't happen, will you abide by the old policy of if they're going to submit applications?
If that doesn't happen, I have strep throat, the flu, and everything else on November 21st, and you two will do what you will do.
Awesome.
Sounds like your strep throat is contagious.
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, if we do not adopt any revisions or change anything, we continue to work under the current policy, which was adopted, I can't remember, I think it was June. And
June 10th?
And that's what we would be working off of.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the October 31st will not have any small cell?
So it should not. No one has filed, except for Extinet, which filed like 14 applications, but which have all already been rejected based on non-compliance with the current policy. And not rejected, just deemed incomplete and stopped in viewpoint. Except for Extinet, no one has filed new applications. But again, I think that has been with the understanding that for this October 31st meeting, we will have taken everything that has been provided to us by them, that we have incorporated what we deem appropriate, and sort of stood firm on what we think. We have made whatever changes we have discussed or things that we might want to see that work better for us. And then go from there. But I would suspect that if we don't do anything on October 31st, we might have a bunch of things happening in November.
The floodgates will open.
Yeah, no, I think they'll just probably just file a bunch of stuff, and then we'll have to apply our current policy, and then the law department will be very busy.
Busier.
All right. Did you guys look at the draft minutes? No, I know. Anyway.
I actually fixed a couple of little odds and ends.
Okay, well.
Commas, extra words, okay. Stuff like that.
All right. Okay, unless you guys have anything else.
I don't.
Okay, so that's it. I'll send this to the law department, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. And Elizabeth.